Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
If you've sung along to a power ballad in the last 30 years, chances are you're already intimately familiar with Diane Warren's songs. Some of her biggest hits include Cher's If I Could Turn Back Time, Celine Dion's Because You Loved Me, and Aerosmith's I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
You act like you're made of stone, but like a hand of cards, you're gonna fold, and I know it, said I know it.
Over the span of her 35-year career, Diane Warren has penned hits for hip-hop, country, R&B, and adult contemporary artists. In late August, she finally released her own album, The Cave Sessions Volume 1, where she wrote songs for artists like Ty Dolla $ign, Darius Rucker, and John Legend. The genre-spanning project is modeled after DJ compilation albums and brilliantly shows off Warren's incredible range as a writer. On today's episode, Rick Rubin talks to Diane Warren about how she decided to become a songwriter when she was just 11 years old, and how her parents built a shed in their backyard where she could work out her early arrangements. Warren also talks about her one and only music teacher, who told her dad she had no future in music, and why she feels she has yet to write her best work.
This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond.
Here's Rick Rubin and Diane Warren.
Good to see you, Rick.
Same. Great to see you. It has been, I don't know how many years, but it feels like it's been a long time.
Really, a really long time. I'm trying to think when the last time I saw you was. I can't remember what I did last week, so.
I remember visiting you in Malibu, and I feel like that's like 10 years ago.
Probably. I remember coming to your studio. I remember being in the studio when you played me Weezer's version of Unbreak My Heart, which was fucking awesome, which I love to this day. I love it. I love just people flipping my songs.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorites of your songs. I just love that song. It's a really special song.
Thank you.
Tell me how that one got written.
It started with the title, Unbreak My Heart. It was a weird title. I'd never heard it before, you know, and can't remember. The magic of that song. Beside me, unbreak my heart. It went from B minor to D minor. It was like, when I came up with that, I was like, oh, fuck, that's fucking cool.
That's the part. That's the part where it gets you. It hits you immediately. It's like, It's an emotional change, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, that's because I didn't really study music. So I didn't know, you know, when something's fucked up and wrong. So I probably do a lot of fucked up wrong things that are cool.
When did you start writing songs? How old were you?
I was 11. But when I was 14, I became, like, obsessed. Where it was all I lived for. I would study Billboard. I mean, I was a shitty student. I got kicked out of, you know, a couple of schools. And I fucking hated school. But when I really got into writing, you know, I made my dad get me a subscription to Billboard. I studied it. Like, that was college to me. I studied to see who wrote every song and who produced songs. And I didn't really care who sang them, you know, as much. I was interested in all the behind-the-scenes stuff going on. But I was just obsessed with writing. And that was when I was 14. So I'm the same way now. I just go, I'm in a nicer place to write, but I'm not. I mean, my room is disgusting where I mainly work. You know, it's really messy and dirty and stuff. So at the time, you know, as a kid, my dad got me a shed in the back of the house because my parents couldn't stand listening to me playing the same song over and over. That's what I do when I'm writing. I'm just kind of playing it over and over and getting it right. So I would go in that, I'd be in that shed in the backyard, you know, this like metal kind of shed thing and just writing. And if it was cold, I had a little heater there. I've just been like this, and I'm the same way now. I do the same thing. I'm still as obsessed. I think hopefully I'm better. And I keep learning. I'm really writing my best songs right now, you know, that I've ever written.
From the time you were 14, did you know you wanted to be a songwriter and that's what you wanted to do with your life? Or did you think you'd have a real job and you would write songs too?
A real job? What? No. I knew when I was eight years old, it's what I wanted to do. You know, and there was no plan B. Plan B is you know, being a bag lady and, you know, living on the street or something. Because I literally do not know how to do anything else. I don't. Yeah. I don't know how to do anything else. I'm utterly useless at everything. Except this.
Where do you think the idea came from to do it? What did you see that at least made you want to do this?
Well, I always loved music, and I've always just been immersed in it. You know, I have older sisters, so I always heard music. My mom and dad had, like, you know, all the great show tunes, you know, Man of La Mancha, all those, you know, My Fair Lady. And then my sisters had all the pop music of the day. And when I grew up, radio played everything. So I just got fed this diet of just great music. But anyways, I remember looking on a 45, kids, when there used to be 45s back in the old days. And it was a 45 of Up on the Roof, and I saw Goffin King, and I loved that song. And I thought to myself, and I still remember looking at it and going, I want to be in those parentheses. I want to be that. I don't want to be the singer. I don't want to do any of that, but I want to be in the parentheses. And I was a kid when I thought that, so how the fuck did I know that?
So cool. That's a great album title for your next album. In the Parentheses would be a great name.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you knew so early and you dedicated yourself to it and it worked.
It's one in a billion.
But it's the passion that you put in that makes it what it is. It's like you're clearly meant to do this. It's interesting.
Yeah. And then there's all these, you know, things that, these pinch me moments. Like I was the biggest Beatles fan. Like one of my sisters took me to see the Beatles twice, you know, when I was like a little kid, like 6 or 7 or something. And I just had Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr on my song, Here's to the Nights.
Wow.
In the video, they're singing my song. And with a bunch of other great artists as well, like Lenny Kravitz and Sheryl Crow and Chris Stapleton, you know, a lot of other artists on there. But the main part of that song is Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr. And I'm like, I still, like, if I think about it, it kind of blows me away.
Did you take piano lessons as a kid?
No, I didn't take any. Okay, so I'm going to tell you, the one time I took music lessons, my dad brought me a little guitar from Tijuana. He took me to a guitar teacher in the Valley. So the guitar teacher wanted me to learn scales, and I didn't. So the second time, I just wanted to make up my own songs. I mean, fuck learning scales. So I came back the next week to take my second lesson, and the guy said, Mr. Warren, you shouldn't bring your daughter back. She has no future in music. So that was my music lessons. You know, I taught myself to chords. I taught myself to play the piano. Someone once told me that the piano is the songwriter's instrument. So when I was 18, I'm like, okay, I'm going to learn enough to, you know, I'm not a good piano player. I'm not even a good guitar player, but I can get around. I know chords. You know, I took one theory class in school that, you know, beginning theory, but I didn't really pay attention to it, but maybe some of it seeped in. But again, I'm not a schooled musician, which is good. Because if you're if you have too much music education, you'll go like, well, that you can't do that. That's not the right. That doesn't, you know. Well, fuck that. I don't even know what's right or wrong. I just go by what I feel.
What's your rhythm of writing? Do you write every day?
Every day.
It's funny, the t-shirt you chose to wear.
Fuck off, I'm writing. Yeah, it's kind of my favorite shirt. I thought it was appropriate since we're talking today that I should wear that. My rhythm and my first hit being Rhythm of the Night, so rhythm isn't a good word. You know, I just show up. You know, I go to work every day. I go get my coffee and go to my office and either starting something new or working on what I'm working on.
How did the first one happen? How did the DeBarge song happen?
I was signed to a guy named Jack White, who, not the White Stripes, Jack White, a German producer. And through Jack, I was signed to Arista Publishing, administered him. So someone over there named Linda Blum actually told me about this movie, The Last Dragon. And I did the song for it. I've done a lot of movie songs. That's what I do a lot of. So my first big hit was from a movie, Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. And DeBarge did the song, and it's the first time that I had a hit words and music, you know, by me.
I wouldn't have guessed that you wrote that. I didn't know that you wrote that song until recently.
Oh, yeah.
Again, you write all kinds of songs.
Yeah, I do.
But that's not one that I would have imagined you wrote, and it really made me happy to see that you wrote it. I love that you wrote it.
I probably wrote a bunch of songs you didn't know I wrote.
Yeah.
You probably didn't know I wrote Blame It on the Rain.
Yeah, I didn't. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Let's say you were to sit down now to write a song. Just start the process for me.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to do that in front of somebody. Like, I mean, I play some chords. I don't know. I might have a drum beat going. I might have programmed a drum pattern or something. Or I might start playing something. Going to come from that. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. And when you play, are you listening to what you're playing and listening, and then based on what you hear, you make decisions to change things or do something different or to go somewhere else?
I'm not even conscious of it. It's such a weird, like, that's why it's hard to, like, you know, people are going, well, what's your process? I mean, I have no fucking clue. You know, I'm just in the moment and I'm just going with it, and concepts kind of pop up. These crazy concepts. Like, I just started something. I'm not going to play it yet because I don't have much of it, but I was like, this is the fucking coolest concept, like, you know, that no one's done this, you know? So it's kind of fun, you know, whether it's Unbreak My Heart or whether it's, you know, something else I'm coming up with. You know, it's just kind of finding something that maybe hasn't been said that way or some notes that excite me, and I don't know.
Have you always programmed a beat first and then played to the beat, or not necessarily?
No, sometimes I don't have any, I'm just sitting at the guitar or my keyboards, you know. I love big string sounds, you know, too. I love that. So, you know, yesterday I was kind of trying, the song I was working on, I was kind of playing it by hand on the drum machine and trying to play the bass on my left hand. It was kind of funny and horrible sounding, but the song I think would be good. So, you know, just however way I do it.
Do you typically get the melody before the lyrics and then you fill in the lyrics?
Yeah, I mean, the really good ones kind of come together in a weird way, but then the rest of the song I have to fill in. Like what's, you know, the first verse might have come easy and then, oh, you know, where am I going to go in the second verse? And I don't even go near the bridge until I have every part of the song written, because I have no idea where the bridge wants to take me.
Even musically, would you not know the bridge until the rest of the song is written?
Yeah, unless I might have had something that I didn't use in the verse, that, like, something I did a few weeks ago was like that, where this part didn't work in the verse, but I was like, I made a little mental note to myself, there's your bridge.
Yeah. Do you ever start the process with an artist in mind, I'm going to write a song for Cher, or do you just write a song?
I try just to write a song, you know, like, I just try to write a great song. I don't want to have any preconceived notions. Like, if I write it with one person in mind, that's going to only be for that one person. And if they don't do the song, you know, then what do, you know? So if you write a great song, you know, it can go a million different ways and to a lot of different people. You know, when I'm writing something, I go, oh, that's really great for so-and-so or so-and-so. But I don't sit down to write a song for somebody, no. I mean, the only time I sit down to write a song for something in particular is a movie.
Yeah. Typically, if it takes a week to write a song, has there ever been a case where a song has come really quick or were a song that you've had to fight with for a really long time? Has that ever happened?
Nothing that I've had to fight with for a really long time. A couple of them have come quick. I can think of two songs that came really quick. You know, two of my favorites, too. One is Till It Happens to You, done by Lady Gaga. That song just wrote itself. The other one is a song that called When I'm Back on My Feet Again that Michael Bolton did that to this day is one of my favorite. Both those songs are two of my favorite songs.
When they come quickly like that, when do you start thinking about who could record it?
During the process, you know, while I'm writing it, I think of, like, different artists that could do the song. I'm not above calling people. You know me.
Yes. How often does it happen where you finish a song and you think, wow, this is really great?
It's been happening a lot lately.
Amazing.
I'm like, wow. Used to be where I felt like I'd write one of those songs every now, like in a bunch of songs and one of those. And now I'm feeling like with a lot of what I'm doing right now.
Such a great feeling.
Yeah, it is. Because I feel like I'm learning and just getting better. I'm just hungry to learn and hungry to write and, you know, hungry to succeed.
Yeah. How would you describe what makes a song great?
It's hard to describe it. You feel it, right? A great melody. I mean, you have to have a great melody. And to me, you have to have a great lyric too, and you have to have the marriage of the two. What do you think makes a great song?
I think it's the feeling. I think it's the way it makes you feel. I don't think there's any technical way to describe it.
Right, but that is what's making you feel something when it's that perfect combination.
Yeah. The example you gave when you played the piece of Unbreak My Heart with that change, to me, those moments are what makes a song great. Like an unexpected change that the fact that it's unexpected makes you listen closer. You know, like it catches your ear. It makes you pay attention.
Yeah.
But often things that catch your ear and make you pay attention are things you don't like. So for it to be something, it's like a fine line when something can be challenging enough to be interesting and still you want to listen to it again instead of never hear it again.
Yeah, I prefer the other way. I prefer it the good way.
We'll be right back with more from Diane Warren after a quick break.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're back with Rick Rubin and Diane Warren.
After the DeBarge song, what was the next song that somebody recorded of yours?
I think Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, or was it I Get Weak? I can't remember. There's a bunch of them then. Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now was from Mannequin, and that's kind of become a classic. I did that with my friend Albert Hammond. And then, you know, a bunch of other ones at that time. I'm just trying to think. A big hit with Heart, Who Will You Run To? Belinda Carlisle, I Get Weak, which is still one of my favorite songs I've ever done. You know, the doors started opening, you know, the doors that are closed. As you know, yeah. When it became easier, you have a little success and all of a sudden, you know, it's the people that didn't like that song. Oh, I really like that song now. You know, that shit goes, you know, but it's just like, it's natural.
Describe what the record business was like when you entered it versus the record business of today and all the changes it's gone through. Just describe your experience of seeing it change.
Okay, well, one thing stays constant, and that's a great song. So what I do stays the same, right? I still have to write a great song. The negative difference to me is it's so data-driven now. To me, the data that matters is if it makes the hair on your arm stand up and it makes you your heart feel something and you just go, fuck, what is that, right? As opposed to your TikTok numbers and all the algorithms, algorithm of the night. I'll rewrite it. Feel the beat of the algorithm of the night. I was talking to an artist, and he's really good, and he just put his album out, and I gave him a song. This was like last year, and one of his managers works for a major company, you know, and he's on an independent label, and I go, why doesn't your manager sign you? And he goes, my TikTok numbers aren't high enough. I'm like, fuck. Like, you know, and you think that, like, the greatest artists, you know, with the Beatles, you know, if their TikTok numbers weren't high, would Prince get signed today? Would, to me, some of that, I find sad, because it's really all about, like we were talking about, what a song makes you feel, not yeah. about your numbers. Because you know what? Some records and artists might take longer, but I don't know if a label will stay with you for that to happen. And to me, that's sad. Don't you think?
Absolutely. And some of the biggest artists in the world didn't break to their, you know, to their third album.
Yeah.
And in today's world, if you know, if the...
Now it's the first single. Yeah, you don't even get to your second. Forget your second album. You don't get to your second single.
Yeah, it takes time to develop.
It's sad. That's sad. And I feel bad for artists. And then they kind of have to do all the work even before a label is you know, interested. But for me, it's the same thing. I have to write a song somebody wants to sing. So that hasn't changed at all.
Mm-hmm. What's the feeling when you hear a great singer sing your song for the first time? How does it?
Nothing better. I mean, nothing better. You know, I'm sitting here writing a song and I'm singing it and I sound like shit, you know. And then, look, I have one song. I'm going to give you an example. And I got to hear two great singers on it. I wrote a song called I Was Here that Beyonce sang. Really one of my favorite songs. And then last year, Dame Shirley Bassey recorded it. It was like, fuck.
Wow.
It's like so
incredible.
Cool. You know,
incredible.
The original James Bond, Dame Shirley Bassey, just did my song. Both sung amazingly, you know. But so different. Like, Beyonce is singing it, fucking amazing. But, you know, she's talking about, you know, I was here, I lived, I loved. She's almost looking ahead. And then Shirley Bassey is looking behind in a way, like everything she's done. And it's so it's such a different reading of the song. And both are just genius, I think.
It's an incredible thing when the song's context changes based on the person singing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, another example was when I did How Do I Live? And it was out with Leanne Rimes and Trisha Yearwood. And Leanne Rimes was 14. And then Trisha Yearwood was older. And so it meant something different. Like, you're 14 years old. How do I live without you? And both versions were great. One was, you know, kind of innocent, and one was lived in. You know, and they both were fantastic. I love to see my songs get other lives and get reinterpreted. You know, and what I really love to go on YouTube and listen to all the covers.
Yeah.
And there's some fucking cool ones. I heard, I did the song Stand Up for Something that Common and Andra Day sings with Common. It's kind of become like this protest anthem, you know, since it was written for this movie, Marshall. And I went online just to see if there was any cool covers. And there's like these little kids, this little girl was probably 8 years old, you know, singing from her heart and singing the shit out of it. And a little kid rapper doing Common's rap. And that just made me so happy. Like that so song cool. got through. Right. It's like the coolest thing in the world.
Have the way that people have reinterpreted your songs, like you write the song, you give a demo to the artist,
yeah.
or you give a demo to the producer, and then they make the record. How often is it very aligned with the demo, and how often does it really stray from the demo as far as the production goes?
Usually it's pretty close, or someone flips it, which I love. Here's the thing. It's my song, but it's your record. So yeah. I know that, and that's cool with me because, I mean, you know, you want people to respect the song, and, you know, I work really hard on them. But sometimes someone will flip something. I remember I had a song called I Could Not Ask for More that Edwin McCain did. And I remember Matt Serletic, who's a great producer, produced it. I heard it. I'm like, oh, this fucking sucks. It, like, you sped it up like 15, you know, beats. You know, it was this ballad. And I hated it when I first heard it. And then the more I heard it, I was like, this is fucking brilliant what he did. He flipped my song and made it better, you know. And then it became a hit by two artists. It became a hit with Edwin McCain. And then Sarah Evans had like a number one country record with it too, with that arrangement. So, you know, I'm all for people flipping my songs. You know, I just wrote something recently that kind of was just doing this Afrobeat kind of thing. And then one of my producers played for me, and I had to listen to it a couple of times, you know, but it's fucking great. He kind of flipped it and yeah. flipped it on its head a bit. But it takes me listening a few times to hear past what's in my head. Because what's in someone else's head might be better.
Would you say most of your songs are love songs?
You know, a lot of them are, but then but then I have songs about other things too. You know, I Was Here isn't a love song. Stand Up for Something's not a love song. Mm-hmm. Till Heaven's You is not a love song. You know, I've I'm trying to think on my album, there's a lot of love songs. But then there's times like this, the Darius Rucker song. And times like this, We Could All Use an Angel.
How did this new album come about? Because in the past, we've talked about a different kind of album that I thought you were going to make.
Well, you never know about that one.
Okay, because that's what I thought when I heard you have an album coming out. I assumed it was that, and it turned into this. And tell me how it happened.
Yeah, it's me being DJ Diane. You know, what it is, I saw a lot of these DJ producers, the Mark Ronsons of the world, or, you know, Calvin Harris, David Guetta, you know, they all curate records of different artists. And I thought, and I have this song that John Legend did. So it kind of happened at the same time. I had a song called Where Is Your Heart? I think it's the best thing he's ever done. He probably doesn't because he didn't write it. It's one of my best songs and performances that I've ever heard on any song of mine. And he kept saying he was going to use the song, and I kept giving it to other artists and having to pull it because he wanted it and then he didn't want it. In my mind, I was like, I'm determined to get this song heard, right? And then mm-hmm. I know no one can sing it like him, but whatever. I don't know if he's ever going to put it on his record. But at the same time, I'm thinking that this idea is percolating in my mind. Like, you know, I do so many different, I'm in all genres of music. Most songwriters are in one genre, whether it's hip hop, country, or Latin, or rock. And I've always been in all genres. I've always worked with every artist there is, you know, the classical mm-hmm. crossover artists, everything. And it got me thinking, you know, why can't I do that? Why can't I curate a record? And let me just do all kinds of songs. Let me do songs like Sweet with Pentatonics and John Batiste and Domino with LP and give Celine Dion a really totally different song, you know, Superwoman. And then give a hip-hop country song to Ty Dolla $ign. And then why can't I put G-Eazy and Santana on a song? She's fire,
yeah.
You know. So it's all over the place. Or Luis Fonsi. Or there's so much variety on this album. And usually, like, when the DJ producers do something like that, they're getting tons of writers. And by the way, every song now, as you know, has like 10 writers on it. Well, yeah. Mine has one.
Or more.
Yeah. You know, or I mean, more. I'm like, I'm going like, what do you guys do? You got the coffee, the hi-hat pattern and the bridge. What the fuck got you a writing credit on that? But, you know, I didn't write the Spanish lyrics on this, so I do have people that did that. And I didn't write, clearly I didn't write G-Eazy's rap, so that's his. But, you know, these songs are all written solely by me. And you hear a song like Sweet, and you go, how did that same person write Where Is Your Heart by John Legend, and how to, like, but that was what I went in, you know, wanting to do. I kind of wanted to go, like, just show what I do. And I have so many songs. I already have, like, part of volume two because I kept changing it because I kept writing new songs.
My favorite song on the record is Seaside. Tell me about that one.
Oh, thank you. You know, I just, you know, I'll be seaside, sitting on the sand, drinking a Mai Tai, waking up and soaking up the sunlight. It was just a happy song, you know. I had this drum beat that I just had on my drum machine. I started playing chords to it, and the song, that's the chorus, just came to me, you know. And it's just such a happy, uplifting song, and it was like right before the pandemic, you know. But it just kind of makes you happy, right? Like, you could close your eyes and just be you know, the best songs to me are the ones that transport you. Mm-hmm. You know, and that song, you can close your eyes, and if you can't get to the seaside, you know, that song kind of brings the seaside to you.
When you're writing that chorus, do you have a picture in mind?
Yeah, I love the beach, I love the tropics, you know, so I love that, and it kind of took me there, and it just made me feel really good, you know, and I love the melody in it, and the verses kind of, you know, you can live your life stuck at a traffic light, you know, it's just kind of cool, but, you know, but I'll be seaside, sitting in the sand, drinking a Mai Tai. I almost wish it said sipping a Mai Tai, sitting on the sand, sipping a Mai Tai. In hindsight, but drinking the Mai Tai is cool too.
Does that happen often, where you'll hear a song or think about a song and think about, oh, I could have done it this way, or a different line?
Oh, not usually. That one, drinking the Mai Tai is fine too. But yeah. Sometimes I hear it, I kind of thought that I wrote it that way, and I hear it, I go, oh no, I didn't, you know. But also, it's a fun song, and having the Spanish in it, I love that as well.
Are there any of the songs that you're surprised were successful?
In my life?
Yeah, like
all
anywhere, like you thought the song would, any particular ones where you think, oh, that one's a good one, but it, you know, I don't know that it wins these awards, but it does. Like, have you had that experience where one just like outperforms your expectation?
I'm more like the opposite. Whenever anything works, I'm shocked, to be honest with you. Like, there's so many things that could go wrong, as you know. Like, you probably made great records, your best records, you go, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
And I've done that. Now, I mean, I remember I did a song with The Cult called Painted on My Heart that, like, that should have been as big as I Don't Want to Miss a Thing to me.
Yeah.
You know, The Cult did it and was for this movie, Gone in 60 Seconds. But I have a bunch of those, you know, that didn't work. And you go, why didn't that work? So when they work, it's like you just go, that's fucking awesome. How did that happen, you know?
It is. It's one of the things that's interesting about the process is there are so many things that have to go right.
Yeah, that aren't in your control.
To break through. Yeah, even honestly, writing it isn't totally in our control because the ideas don't always come. You know, like the best ideas don't always come.
Yeah, but when they do, and you can have
it's
the best
still
song in the world.
Out of our control.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I just want to keep creating great songs. And by the way, no, my best songs aren't even heard yet. I have so many great songs.
Yeah.
I'm always writing them. So it's always great when, you know, when they happen, or even if they're not the biggest hit, you know, like maybe Here's to the Nights, the song I did with Ringo, Paul McCartney there, that wasn't technically a hit, but I think it's a perennial song that'll be around forever. And I think that there's nothing cooler. That's cooler than having a number one record to me.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more from Diane Warren. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards, a hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Chris Christopherson.
How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Here's the rest of Rick Rubin's conversation with Diane Warren.
Have you had any songs that, when they came out, didn't perform well, but then found a second life in a different way and turned into a hit?
Oh, yeah, I do. One of them, well, it's kind of funny. I did a song called Don't Turn Around, and it was after Tina Turner's first album, her big comeback album with What's Love Got mm-hmm. to Do With It. And she was doing her second album, and I did a song called Don't Turn Around, and Brian Adams produced it, and it was fucking awesome. It just sounded like a hit. And I remember her manager going, well, you know, it's not going to be on her album. It's like, ugh. So bummed out. I just remember, like, I still to this day remember how bummed out I was. And but they put it on a song on the B side of Typical Male, of a song of Tina's. Somehow, Luther Ingram, who did If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right, somehow he heard the song, recorded it, and, you know, went to, like, you know, number 80 on the R&B chart. You know, and then the song has a crazy life. Then somehow, this group called Aswad, a reggae group out of the UK, heard Luther Ingram's version, and they did a reggae version, and it became a number one record all over Europe and in England. And then along the way, all these other people recorded it, like Bonnie Tyler and Neil Diamond, and all these, like, people started covering the song. And then Clive Davis heard the reggae version and gave it to Ace of Base, and it did become a hit. And here's the irony. Here's the total irony. I haven't seen the Tina Turner musical yet, but in the Tina Turner musical, one of the big show-stopping moments is Tina singing that song. So it kind of came amazing. Full circle. So, yeah. Like, songs can have a million other lives. I don't give up on a song because it wasn't a hit for somebody.
Yeah, it's fascinating how they can take on a life of their own. It's amazing to watch.
And yeah, it's again, like a living thing, right?
It is, and it is all out of our control, and yeah. You never know why they come around. It's almost like the way that it works is how it's meant to be. You know, yeah. It's... Because had the first version of it been a hit, maybe all those covers wouldn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had Neil Diamond cover a song of mine. That was cool, you know? And yeah, and then it so became cool. A hit, and then it went full circle back to Tina Turner's musical. So to me, a great song is timeless and genreless.
At what point is it the most fun? Like, of all the stuff you do, is it most fun to start a new one?
Yes.
Is it to finish
yes.
one?
Okay, it's both. The funnest thing that I love is coming up with something great. sometimes I'll have a hit of a joint and I'm working on something and I think it's really great. I'm like, oh, well, I hope when I come back and I'm not high, it still sounds good. Yeah. No, but it's that feeling of coming up with something. That is my favorite thing.
How often when you come back, is it different than you thought it was?
I know. I usually know that day. It's that thing. It's that what it makes you feel. But just a cool, like just saying something in a different way that just gets you so excited or this melody or the combination or that you come up with something that there's only so many notes and stuff, but yet you can find a million ways to make them work. And I love, that's my favorite thing is to come up with something. And finishing it is great, but coming up with something is better. You know, and then I put a lot of time into these songs. I really do. I'll sit and I'll work all day long on two lines, the last two lines of the bridge. Like, fuck, everything else was easy, but those two lines have taken me all day or maybe till the next day, you know. But then, you know, I'll listen to a song I might have written, you know, a few months ago or a year ago, whatever, if I have a meeting with an artist, and I'll listen and I'll go, I'm so glad I stayed with that song. And yeah. I didn't, because I'm listening like with fresh ears. I'm like, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I took those 2 days or whatever it took to get that right because it stands up.
Do you ever leave a song unfinished or never? You always finish.
I finish everything I'm writing at the time, but I have some starts that I should get to.
And start might just be like a cool chord change or like the beginning of some. How small would an idea be that's worth coming back to?
It's usually a chorus. It's usually a hook. Mm-hmm. But I move on to something else and I go, God, what about that? I should go back to that. And I will. I will. I have some really good songs that I probably... that I'll finish, but I'm always coming up with new ones. It's like my album. I kept like, you know, I kept coming up with new songs and like, well, I want to do this one. You know, my album was done and my dentist is friends with someone in Pentatonix. My album was done. And he goes, you need to, you know, meet the Pentatonix people. I go, oh, I just written this song called Sweet. It's kind of like, it's on my album's called kind of Motown-y. And so I met them and my album was really done. I'm like, oh, but I want them to do Sweet. And then I ran into John Batiste at the Oscars earlier this year where I lost for my 12th time. And it's okay. I'm in the game and I fucking love it.
Yeah.
And John Batiste won, you know, for on his first nomination for Soul. And when I met him, I was like, oh, what if I put together John and Pentatonix? That could be so totally cool because John's whole vibe is this positivity. He's like so upbeat.
Yeah.
I wrote the song. That's the one I was nominated for this year. It's called Scene.
Amazing.
Yeah, Laura Pausini sang it.
Can you play a little bit of the song?
The one I wrote for the movie?
Yeah. But can you just play a little now so we can hear it?
I want you to know that you're seen. 'Cause I see you. Sorry. And I see to who you are. I can't sing it. You can't hide from me. I want you to know that you see. It's a beautiful song. I can't sing it.
It sounds so good.
Yeah, listen to it. It's called, well, in Italian, it's called EOC, Scene, and Laura Pausini sings it. So it's beautiful in Italian.
You've had a couple of other songs that have been translated into Italian. How does that experience work?
I love it. I love when my songs are in different languages. And everything sounds better in Italian and Spanish.
Yeah.
It just does. They're both such beautiful, romantic languages. That's why I really, on my album, I definitely wanted Spanish.
When you write a song for a movie, do they tell you the story? Do they give you the script? Like, how much do you like to know before writing a song for a movie?
Oh, I like to know everything. Ideally, I could see a rough film. Like this year, yeah. I did a song. I did a few songs, but I did one of the ones I'm really excited about is a song called Somehow You Do that Reba McEntire sings. And it's from a movie called 4 Good Days, Glenn Close and Mila Kunis, about a drug addict daughter and her mom. And I mean, it's a really powerful movie. But I saw a rough of that. And I wanted to write a song, a really hopeful song, you know, at the end of that movie. And I got Reba McEntire to sing my song, which is really cool, too. She's so great.
Amazing.
which she puts into it. And that song in that movie, it means one thing, but outside of the movie, because it's about like going through tough times, you know, and if you look at the comments on the video, it's a lot about depression, a lot of hardships, the people that you're going through. So I try to keep the song open as well to fit the movie. That's the most important thing, but it has to live outside of the movie as well. And then people could become whatever anybody wants it to be. But back to your question, ideally, if I watch a movie or read a script, but I have to feel what that is, and then it's a subconscious thing, and it's if I'm doing an end song, like I did something I'm so excited about, but I'm not going to talk about it for next year, that I read the script and it just was so powerful, and it took me a couple of days to figure out what I wanted to say there, because it had to speak for the character, and it's an actual person, so it had to really be powerful. And it took me a couple of days, but when I got it, and I sat at the keyboard and I started crying, I knew that it was, that I knew it was right.
Yeah, beautiful. Do you ever hear something that you wrote a long time ago and have a new understanding of what it means later?
Not really, because I don't go back and listen to my old songs. But if I did, I probably would. I'm so forward motion in how I am. Like, I don't usually look back. Like, my rearview mirror is just cracked.
But your songs are so in the culture that your songs come up. If you live life, we get to hear your songs in life, you know, without, same for me. Like, I don't listen back to my music, but it's not unusual for me to be somewhere and hear one of my old songs.
Yeah, and how amazing is it that the work you did, amazing. You've done, but you're thinking of different things now, right? You've already moved past that, but when you stop and think about it, it is mind-blowing, the effect what you do or what I do has on people. It's just like when we grew up. Think about how that was for us. Well, that's what you're doing or what I'm doing could be for them.
And it has the same effect on us. I mean, I know when I hear a song, sometimes I'll hear a song and I don't remember if I hear something I like, I can't tell whether I worked on it or not.
Yeah,
because they fall into the same category of something that I've listened to so much.
Right.
Either I was in the room or I wasn't.
Right, right.
But the same, I've heard it, you know, 10,000 times, so I may have been there. You know, I have to think about, have to try to picture the room and see if I was there. Sometimes it really feels familiar. It's like, wow, where did we record this? Like, oh, wait, I had nothing to do with this one.
Wait, you could be somewhere and you hear something. You go, like, it happens to me. Like, I was getting coffee BC before COVID, and I heard something. I go, what is that? Oh, that happened to me recently, too. And it was just the most random thing, and they were my songs. That happened to me at a restaurant like last month with my friend.
Yeah.
And it was so weird because I was about to send one of the songs. I forgot that someone even did it. And I was about to send it to another artist, you know, like, I'm glad I didn't because it was in the same genre of music. They probably wouldn't have wanted to do it. Another song comes on right after. And it was this obscure song I did on NSYNC. And I was like, wait, that sounds familiar. Oh, shit, that's my song. And I was wondering if someone in the restaurant knew that I was there or something. Because it was kind of obscure songs.
Yeah.
But I forgot that was mine. And then I had to Shazam it.
It's happened to me too. I have Shazam songs like, oh, wow, I produced that. Completely forget. It just has to do in both of our cases with the volume. You know, we work on a lot of music and it comes in and it goes out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's on to the next. And not that it doesn't mean a lot to us because it does, you know. My songs mean a lot to me. But I'm like, I'm what I'm excited about is the next song and what I'm working on now. And
yeah. Anything else from your love of music that you want to talk about?
I don't know, I think I kind of covered. I just love doing this. I love writing songs. I feel like I've almost like never had a hit, you know. So it's that hunger and that love of it that means everything.
Yeah, it's no different. It's nice when they're hits.
Yeah,
but at the same time when we get to make them, the minute that it's done, it's a great feeling of like, wow, we got to make this beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's the coolest feeling in the world. You just want the world to hear them.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, I hope that there's a way for the world to hear all of the songs that you have that you've never put out and that have not yet come out. And that'd be a fun thing to think about is how to make that happen because they all need to be
heard.
For sure.
On this album, you know, there's so many good songs on this album too that I hope that we get singles rights to the John Legend song because that's just such a great song.
Yeah, I like the Domino song too. I think.
Yeah, isn't that a cool song? That's like the one. That's so unlike that. That's one that is like people are like, you wrote that? Like it's so different. It's like a spaghetti western weird song, and I love LP's voice on it, and it's just it's so weird. But I think that's like a big song on there. That's a lot of people's favorite song.
It's really catchy. It's just super catchy, and I like the fact that it's not like other songs. You know, it's a particular thing. It's really good.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I have things that people don't even know that I have, you know, too. And that's one of them. I'm glad it got a chance to get heard, and I hope it's a big hit.
That's true. We see you soon.
Okay, great to see you, Rick. I hope to see you in person soon.
Same.
Thanks to Diane Warren for sharing her songwriting process with Rick. You can check out a playlist of our favorite Diane Warren penned songs, plus her new album, at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brokenrecordpodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Martin Gonzalez, Eric Sandler, and Jennifer Sanchez, with engineering help from Nick Chafee. Our executive producer is Mila Bell. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin, consider becoming a Pushnik. Pushnik is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushnik exclusively on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.